Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Claudia Monticelli with another episode of Multiple Voices. My Multiple Voices podcast, true to its name, includes different series. For example, we have the Voices of Love, where we discuss relationships, the voice of empowerment, the voice of laughter and play, the voice of pleasure, and the magical voice of archetypes and how they change the way we live. But we also have the voice of memory that includes everything from history to discussions of past life regression. There's also writing voices, where we interview both seasoned writers and authors who have just started getting their feet wet with writing, and we learn what can work for you as potential writers. Our series called Voice of the Spirit discusses different forms of spirituality and religion. And then Channeling Voices is a series that covers what happens when you channel, but is also extended to mediumship. Take a moment to review this podcast if you've enjoyed listening, and leave a hearty 5 stars. I'd appreciate it. Enjoy your listening. Ladies and gentlemen, it's me again, Claudia Monticelli, and I'm here with another episode of my podcast, Multiple Voices. I'm very, very pleased to have with me a woman, and I have both men and women, but today I'm especially happy to speak to Carrie Ann Pizzullo. Carrie, say hello to our guests.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Claudia.
Yeah, I'm so glad you took the time to be with us today. Let me first introduce you, and then I'll start with my bombarding to you with the questions and playing the devil's advocate. Who is Carrie? Carrie is a professional tarot reader, and everyone knows what that is, but she's also the founder of Nerd Witch Writing and Creative Consulting. I will leave that first as a question, but I'm going to go on first to introduce you and then come back to all of these goodies. And in that group, she supports spiritual and wellness professionals in shining their light to make the world a better place. She has a PhD in American women's history and is, well, she's a goddess after all, and she is the author of Bachelors and Bunnies, The Sexual History of Playboy. And I laughed so hard when I saw that, and I'm thinking, I got to talk to this woman. And Carrie also has a forthcoming book which explores mystical lessons on life, death, and grief in a dying world, and that's what our theme will be here. So, we all know what tarot reading is all about, maybe not all of us, but that's more common. What about this nerd witch writing and creative consulting? What is that?
This is a new project that I've recently launched, which I'm absolutely loving because I think it really integrates the two sides of me, the academic intellectual side and the spiritual woo-woo creative side.
Right, right. So
I'm offering writing and creative support, social media, graphic creation, things like that, to wellness coaches, spiritual professionals, and things like that. And I'm helping them get their work out into the world.
Good for you. Beautiful.
I say that spirit is my passion, but writing is my superpower.
Yeah.
So I'm really supporting other professionals in that way.
Well, it's so important for people to put black on white, so to speak, because it has to be heard, it has to be read, it has to be spoken about. So
right.
That is
right.
Great. And so you witch writing, huh? I love that witch writing. That's used up until recently, that's been such a looked down upon word. And still a lot of people have trouble hearing that word witch, you know. And as you heard, I said, she's a goddess after all. And, you know, they're two sides to the same coin in many ways. So now let's go to this. I know what a PhD in women's history could be. That's pretty self-explanatory. But what about the Bachelors and Bunnies, The Sexual History of Playboy? What got you into writing that, about that?
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be a long story, folks.
That's a whole episode on its own, so I'll try
all
and
right.
be brief.
No, take your time.
This project started early in graduate school many moons ago.
Uh-huh.
It was supposed to be a paper, a 30-page paper that I wrote for one semester course. I had always been interested, certainly in women's history, but particularly the history of gender and sexuality in the United States and the 1950s. I was always fascinated by that decade. And I additionally love anything pop culture. So I had actually been reading a book by Barbara Ehrenreich about masculinity in the 1950s, and she mentions Playboy. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. How did this magazine, which many people considered to be pornography, and at the time I did, I no longer do at this point, but at the time I thought, how did pornography become mainstream in a decade? Because it was founded in 1953. How was it founded? How was this? How did this go mainstream in a decade that was supposedly so conservative? Because in the United States, the 50s are really remembered for being a particularly conservative time. So I just started digging into this. It was only supposed to be 30 pages. this was, 2003, 2004, 2005. In 2022, I'm still getting major international media interview requests to talk about Playboy. It's like we just can't get enough. The paper turned into my dissertation, which turned into my book, because as I started to dig into the history of Playboy, the research just really opened up.
What was the thread in your PhD? What angle did you take to do that, to assess that?
Well, and this was kind of the fun part, but also something that I still struggle with to this day. If you've seen any of the recent news about Playboy, based on a new documentary that's come out, but I've always been a feminist. And so I absolutely consider myself a feminist historian. But as I started to dig into Playboy, I was assuming I was just going to find sexism. You know, and that's the story that's often told. But what I discovered was, in addition to all that we know about Playboy as a sexist magazine, as objectifying of women, that there was actually a lot of pro-woman stuff in that magazine in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s.
I'm going to make you laugh now. During we were talking before we got on, and I was telling you half of my life was spent in the United States and half in Italy. During my university years, I worked in a health club, and I worked in a health club for about 5, 7, 8 years. And during that time, I was giving, you know, courses, lessons to women, you know, exercising, jumping up and down. One of the women became so, she wanted to be my friend. She, you know, you have to meet my son. You have to meet my son. You have to meet my son. And when a mother says that you have to meet their son, it's not going to go well, right? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 5. I said, okay, let's meet your son. She gave him my number. It was a home phone number. He contacted me and he said, why don't we go out? And I said, oh, okay. He said, I'll take you to dinner. And he comes and picks me up. And he said, you know, not knowing you and wanting to make a very good impression, I planned for us to go to the Playboy Club and have dinner.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, I was living in Northern Jersey at the time. And we have a Playboy Club in the hills of, you know, Jersey. And I thought, oh, how interesting. And we went. And I tell you that I thought, well, this guy's pretty smart for doing this. I mean, there was no, absolutely no attraction. No attraction. There was, I knew before I went that it was going to be a failure. But I went to the club. We sat down. And it was so high class, but not too high class that you would feel out of line no matter what you wore. And it was very, very particular. It's one of the most particular places I had ever been. And even the bunnies who came to serve us, in no way did you feel uncomfortable because they were showing their their wares and you were not. It was very, very calm and high class, and you felt comfortable. You felt, wow, if I'm here, this is, you know, and this is, while you were talking, it made me think of that. And when you said that it was pro-women, there was a lot, and I thought, well, it had to be for it to be so successful. And you being still interviewed and still, you know, requested to be interviewed goes a long way in saying that we haven't spoken about that phenomenon enough. And will there be a comeback of something like that today, do you think, for women?
Oh, goodness. There's so much there. So when I say that there was, there are aspects of the magazine that were pro-woman.
Yeah.
I'm talking very specifically about a pre-feminist culture.
Yes.
There's a real difference between what's happening in American culture before the women's movement of the late 60s and early 70s and then after.
Right.
So in the context of that pre-feminist culture, Playboy absolutely, I think, was a very sexist magazine.
Yes.
But there was a lot in the magazine that was supportive of sexual freedom for everybody, not just men. Now, granted, sexual freedom for women in the context of Playboy was for the benefit of men.
Yes.
But it was still available to women, and it portrayed women's sexuality in a way that you couldn't find in mainstream American culture at the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of women read Playboy in those years, in the 50s and 60s, because they considered it a mature treatment of sex, not dirty, not sort of, you know, icky or anything like that. Something mature and relatively classy.
Well written. It was well written.
Yeah. Good writers, good journalism, high quality magazine. And I think that after the feminist movement and the sexual revolution in the Vietnam era, American culture changes and really moves past what Playboy was offering in the magazine. And we get a much more expansive notion of sexual freedom and feminism and all of that kind of stuff. So when I make this argument, you know, it's very nuanced. I'm not saying it's a feminist magazine. As far as... are we going to see something like that again? I don't think we're going to see the elevation of a white, male-centered cultural empire, because that's what Playboy was in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
It was a cultural empire way beyond the magazine, way beyond the clubs.
Yeah.
It was a very influential cultural icon. I don't think we're going to see something like that. As much as sexism and objectification and misogyny absolutely still exist, I think the culture has changed too much. And I'm not sure our culture would accept it to a degree that it was accepted in the 50s and 60s.
I get it.
Right. I mean, post Me Too, I mean, my reference earlier, if you've seen anything about Playboy in the news lately, again, even in 2022, it's still making news. There's a new docuseries. It's currently playing on the A&E network. It's like 10 episodes. And I was interviewed for many hours in the production of that. I do not appear on camera, but I was a part of the production. And this the series documents horrific accounts of abuse by many women over decades at the hands of Hefner and his inner circle. So I think particularly as more and more of that kind of stuff comes to light, we are just becoming more and more suspicious of these men who have almost unlimited power in our culture.
Well, now let's turn the tables and get to the good stuff. You have a book coming out that explores mystical lessons on life, death, and grief in a dying world. Now, that is a big mouthful of things. Let's start with individual words, mystical lesson. For you, mysticism, mystical, what does that mean?
I use a lot of these words kind of interchangeably: mysticism, mystery, magic. What I'm speaking about is spirit and our relationship to spirit and the ways in which it manifests in our normal, mundane, earthly lives.
Okay, so lessons on life, death, and grief in the dying world. So let's take the dying world. When you say a dying world, you put it right after grief and you think, oh my God, people are dying and the world is dying. What do you mean by the dying world?
I mean exactly what you said, that right, we're all experiencing our own losses, and especially over the last couple of years. We experience grief in these personal ways when we lose a loved one, we lose a pet. More and more people are losing homes to wildfires and things like that. Then, as you said, the earth itself is dying, right? Unless something dramatically changes really quickly, and maybe not even then, because of climate change, we're seeing environmental collapse speeding up all around us. And unfortunately, over the last few years, even before the pandemic, I had experienced a series of losses, both human and animal, including two people who were very close to me. And I was very lucky up until that point in my life in that I hadn't lost anyone close to me. And then I got slammed repeatedly over several years. So I was experiencing grief in a new way. But at the same time, I was coming to the visceral realization of climate collapse.
Okay. But the climate collapse had nothing to do with your personal grief. That was just your awareness of the environment, is that right?
I would say even before the individual personal deaths began in my life, I had had this realization of the reality of climate change and what I prefer to call climate collapse. And I went into a period of deep grieving.
Okay.
It became a personal crisis for me, particularly as a mother.
So you're talking to us from Colorado. Have you always lived in Colorado?
No, not at all. I grew up in Ohio, and then I moved to New York. And New Jersey is an important part of my life because I'm obsessed with Bruce Springsteen. So I'm very... I still consider New York my home, but I moved to New York several years ago. I mean, Colorado several years ago.
Okay. So let's go backtrack a little bit, because we have the image of an academic who started out, well, an academic tarot reader like myself, you know, but who now is sort of leaving a topic that you can't ever get rid of, this women's history, because people are still coming to you for interviews, and I get the same. But now we are going back to the founder, you know, of the Nerd Witch writing and creative consulting. So you are literally, in my eyes, a person who is waking up the witches to be able to have them communicate and write. Now, can you tell us what the book is about, how it's divided, how you've explored, what is it about?
So it's really about a macro and a micro exploration of life, death, and grief, because this has manifested in my life in these two ways at the same time: my grief for the dying world and my grief for loved ones who have passed. So I'm really thinking about what it means to live into death. That's the phrase that I use. It's kind of been my survival tactic.
Okay.
living into death. That's the way I've been navigating my grief. Coming into greater acceptance of death.
Yeah.
My own, as well as others, the death of the natural environment around me. Mm-hmm. And really what that means is I've really had to dig into my spiritual beliefs and my spiritual practices and my beliefs about spirit and the afterlife.
Okay. All right.
So, to survive this grief.
All right. So now we're in the hub of what we really want to, you know, to sort of talk about in an articulated way, in a very specific way. You do mention magic. You mention magic a lot, and you call it energy, intuition, spirit. Can we can we talk a bit about magic more? Because I don't believe we talk enough about it. And then I'll, you know, one at a time, I'll come back and give you more to talk about.
Yeah, and I'm sure different people have different definitions of what magic is. I think, particularly for a lot of practitioners of witchcraft, it means manipulating energy, right? Okay. You can move energy, you can shift energy, you can work with energy to create outcomes that you want to manifest in your life.
Okay, hold on. When you say manipulating, we're talking about both the positive connotation of manipulating and the negative connotation, because manipulation can have both. No?
It could be. I mean, you could use this stuff for good and you could use it for bad. Like, you can use anything for good.
Because a lot of people come to me and they say, I think I'm an object. I've been targeted with black magic. That's the first thing they say.
Right. And, you know, and I think it's just our association of this word, witch and witchcraft.
Right.
The first thing a lot of people think is somebody's doing something scary to me. They're putting a curse on me. Right. But you don't have to ever encounter a witch in your life to have somebody mistreat you.
Obviously.
Right? The vast majority of people I have ever encountered who identify as witches are so gentle and loving. So I say manipulation. I mean it in a neutral sense. I mean working with energy, using energy to affect outcomes that you want in your life.
And can you, give us an example, Carrie?
Yeah, I would be so happy to. You know, I laugh because I mentioned Bruce Springsteen already. I'm beyond obsessed with him. But literally, probably the best energetic work I've ever done, or maybe my favorite, I would say my favorite spell, which is just another word for working with energy.
Right.
Or setting an intention. My favorite spell was to manifest a meeting with Bruce Springsteen, and it worked.
Logan, now you're going to have to tell us. You're going to have to tell us all about it.
Okay, so this was in 2016, and I had heard from his there's a Sirius satellite radio Bruce Springsteen channel that I listen to all the time, and they said that they were going to be announcing a contest sometime soon to meet Bruce in Italy, actually, to get tickets to a show in Rome and then meet him backstage. And I was like, this is my chance. And I thought, if this contest is about writing, I'm going to win it because I am a writer. And I waited and waited for the announcement. And they said, the contest is that you're going to write a paragraph about why you should meet Bruce Springsteen in Rome. And I was like, oh my God, it's about writing. I'm going to win. So I wrote my paragraph and I did some serious energy work and intention setting. And I lit candles and I was like, this is going to happen. I told my husband, don't plan anything for July because we're going to Italy. I was in it. On the day they said they were announcing the winner, I was literally like sitting by my phone nervous because I was waiting for them to call me. I was like, I got this. This is, you know, I'm a witch. I'm making this work. Well, I didn't win.
Oh.
I was so sure. I cried for days.
And you grieved.
I grieved. Yeah. I was like, you know, because I was disappointed that I wasn't going to Italy and I wasn't going to meet Bruce. But I was also like, what does this mean about my practice?
Right.
And what does this mean about energy and intention?
Energy, yeah.
Am I, you know, making all this up or whatever? Well, that was in the spring of 2016.
Yeah.
In August or September, he announced the publication of his autobiography and that he was going on a book tour.
Oh.
And I ended up going, there were small numbers of tickets for each appearance around the country. And there was one bookstore, a Barnes & Noble in LA, that was not ticketed. It was first come, first serve.
Oh, no.
And I said, I'm going to meet Bruce. I flew out the night before. I arrived outside the store on the sidewalk at 7:30 p.m. He was due to arrive at noon the next day, but the line had already started forming. So I spent 17 hours on the sidewalk in LA, and I did meet Bruce. I got a picture with him. I got to hug him. I got to show him the tattoo that I got for him. And not only that, but I made amazing friends in that line that I was texting with today. It's five, Good. 6 years later. So it didn't occur. My manifestation didn't happen in the way I visualized it.
Right.
But it still happened a few months later. And I mean, granted, meeting Bruce in Rome would have been amazing, but I didn't imagine getting amazing friends out of the deal.
Right.
So
right.
if you leave yourself open to the way the universe wants to make it happen for you, it can still happen in unexpected ways.
I'm laughing at me. This is a story that you don't forget for a very long time. Okay, so now we're because magic for you is has in your description is a spiritual practice, all about intentions and desires and things like that. You do mention the goddess, and I'm wondering what the goddess is. What I work with archetypes. I know, one chapter of my book is on the goddess and goddess on the wall. I mean, I know all about the goddesses in the world, the history of goddesses. What does the goddess mean to you?
I don't think that source has a gender. But I do think that we relate to
divine
the energy
source.
Of
divine
source. I don't think it has a gender. But I do think we relate to that energy in different ways that make sense to us. And I do believe, I suspect that it is actually true that that energy does exist as a consciousness in different forms.
Yeah.
So I do believe that goddess energy is real. But at the same time, when I sort of had what I call my spiritual awakening and began on this path.
When was that? Can you tell us when that was about?
That was in 2013.
Okay. All right.
When I realized the path of witchcraft and paganism and goddess and magic and all of that stuff. It also, though, was a conscious decision to relate to divine energy in a feminine form because it's what resonates for me. I had to give myself permission to do that. I had been denying it to myself for a long time because I thought it was just wishful thinking. Wishful feminist thinking.
Let me just pause for a second because you talked about awakening and you had to give your self-permission to do it, and there was an intention there. There was definitely a choice to do that. So when you mention awakening usually is something, it's not an aha moment, but it is enlightenment. And that to me doesn't come hand in hand with an intention to go there. And now I'm wondering, there must have been something that occurred in your life that brought you toward awakening. Is that the way it went?
When I say the word awakening, I mean profound realization and recognition of spirit and my relationship to it and my particular path. Part of that was allowing myself the space to relate to that energy in a feminine form, to give myself permission to say, yeah, I'm going to call it goddess. That's what makes the most sense to me.
But I'm going to allow your myself. Life, in your life, was it paired with grief? Was there something that radically changed during that time?
No, actually not at all. It's very unmagical how this happened. My whole life I had been interested in spirituality, paranormal, metaphysical mystery, all that stuff. But I never put it together as a formal spiritual path. Mm-hmm. Leading up to this awakening, I had spent several years dabbling in mm-hmm. different traditions, trying to find my path because I felt the need for something formal. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't finding it.
Yeah.
And my best friend had been talking to me for a long time. She had been moving in and out of witchcraft and goddess worship. And I had first discovered goddess spirituality actually in college.
Yeah.
And it was really eye-opening for me. But as I got older, I thought that that's all it was, that it was like feminist exploration for a 22-year-old girl. And it wasn't real.
Well, there was the goddess movement, and it is a historical phenomenon. And it wasn't, I don't remember if the exact name is the goddess movement or the, but there was a really, it was not religious. And that's the first time there was talk about goddesses.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just felt for me that it was wishful thinking.
Uh-huh.
That it wasn't that. I unfortunately, stupidly, naively, when I was 22 years old, looked at that history of feminist spirituality. And although for a short time, it seemed to really open up my eyes to this spiritual path, over time, I began to think that it was feminist compensation for patriarchal religion.
Oh, I see.
That the spirituality itself wasn't real.
Okay,
that trying to say that divine source was feminine was just feminist grasping.
I see.
Trying to make it so.
I get it.
So I pushed it aside for a long time. I thought, oh, I was just young and I was just like, you know,
well, that's
being
a lot
a young
of
feminist.
Work. That's a long route to get to that. That was many... I mean, that's hard work. That is a lot, many moons of thinking and experiencing. Yes. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Hats off to you, Carrie. Hats off to you.
Yeah, thank you. And so my best friend, my soul sister, twin mm-hmm. person, mm-hmm. she had been going in and out of this stuff over the years. So it was like, you know, conversations continued, mm-hmm. but I didn't take it seriously. And then one day I was like, oh my God, I've checked off every tradition on my list that I've wanted to look into, and mm-hmm. none of them fit for me. Ugh, let me Google witchcraft. I literally Googled it.
Yeah.
And I came on the Wikipedia page for Wicca. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's me.
yeah.
That was me all along. And I don't consider myself Wiccan now. I was initiated into Wicca. Mm. I'm much more a buffet picking and choosing from different traditions now, but that was my awakening, was a Wikipedia page, and mm-hmm. I threw myself in wholeheartedly and ended up with some intense spiritual experiences mm-hmm. that opened my eyes to different things, and it's never been the same since.
Well, this brings us to a very important part of our talk, because we're into grieving and the afterlife. And the afterlife is where I wanted to go. That was my witchy intention from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Let's talk about grieving and the afterlife. Do they go together? Or anything afterlife? What happens in the afterlife? Why? Because you mentioned to me that grieving was not a safeguard, but it was a survival kit. Thinking about the afterlife, it was a survival gift for grieving. Maybe you can explain all that to us.
Absolutely. So thank the goddess I had these spiritual beliefs and the spiritual grounding before all of these deaths started to occur in my life, particularly mm-hmm. my father, mm-hmm. Who I was very close to. Actually, yesterday is the anniversary of the 2-year anniversary of what I've come to think of his transition day. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't have these spiritual beliefs, I don't know how I would have kept my sanity through his transition.
Yeah.
And right after he died, I just started reading book after book mm-hmm. of the afterlife to get that reassurance, to remind myself that as much as I hate this new state of being. He's not in his body anymore.
Right.
I completely believed, and I know that he still exists, that death is not what we think it is.
Right.
That yes, it's the body, but he is still here and he is still with me. And so I immediately sort of embarked on an adjustment. I began to think of, okay, well, this is a new dynamic in our relationship. This is a new stage in our relationship. Mm-hmm. And I need to learn how to work with this and nurture it and explore it. And all of that gave me a much greater sense of acceptance of his transition.
Okay.
It's still very hard, but more accepting.
We carry it with us every day. How many times of day you want, oh, let me pick up the phone, you know, I'll pick up the phone.
Right.
Now, you said you read so many books on the afterlife. What did you learn about the afterlife? What were the first initial discoveries of what you were reading?
Well, I think a lot of it I already knew, right? The fact that death isn't what we think it is. It's not real. The veil between the worlds is so thin and permeable. And
in what sense? Maybe you could explain it to our audience.
We can communicate. Mm-hmm. We can communicate, right? We're still living together. We're still in relationship. I think of the worlds.
Yeah.
Their dimension and our dimension, or all of the dimensions. I think of it as a hotel.
Okay.
And I think that we and our bodies live on one floor, one of the lower floors.
Right.
Once you leave your body, you now occupy one of the upper floors in this hotel. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of learning to work the elevators, to connect with each other, mm-hmm. and to communicate. And so it was very important for me to remember that my dad is still here. Like, yes. I think literally as I'm speaking to you, he's sitting next to me.
Right.
Right. And so I knew all of that already, but reading these books about the afterlife just reminded me and reassured me.
Mm-hmm. So let's say when you talk about afterlife, I'm not sure how, you know, what you embrace or ascribe to, but do you believe in past lives and reincarnation? And so did that cause any difficult for you, knowing that your dad's soul may have reincarnated? Nonetheless, he's still with you and you can still communicate, because you can, no matter where they are. But did you have trouble going there with that idea of where could he be? He could be a woman, a young girl now, you know, so there's many things.
That's such a good question. I do believe in reincarnation for sure. Mm-hmm. I haven't worried that he has already reincarnated. That's not my, now let me give a caveat.
We're talking about the soul. It's a soul. Even if they have reincarnated.
Yeah.
You that's communicate what I was gonna with the say. Soul, not the body.
Yeah. I don't know in how many places we exist at one time.
Yeah.
Right?
But you talked about timelines, didn't you? Did you talk about timelines at all? No, because you were talking about worlds and in the many worlds.
Yeah.
And that has to do with our notion of time and the timelines where our existence comes about in many different dimensions. But go on.
Yeah. So I it actually didn't occur to me that maybe, well, actually my sister had a baby a few months after he died. I don't think that he's my dad.
No, it doesn't usually happen that way. They don't reincarnate in the same experience or the same families. It's doesn't
really. So, yeah. My understanding is that there is a lot of overlap, but I could be.
Well, it depends on what his soul. You know, I would have need time, but it depends on what his soul chose as a contract and chose as an experience for the next life. But I'm getting the response, he's not there. He's not with the family there. He's in another area of the world. It's not the United States. And we're talking about South America.
Interesting.
Where, South America, and quite far south in the Americas. And he's still a boy, you know, a male, but completely different environment, completely different social level and conditions. But
interesting. Thank you. I mean, it hadn't occurred to me. I still
but
feel him
light.
So much.
I see. He's in the light. He's definitely in the light when he passed. He's not earthbound. Had a wonderful transit. Resting in peace, as they say.
I hear from him so much, particularly in dreams. So one way or another, I think he's still with me and communicating. So I don't know if these are like different pieces of our souls that sort
what
of do these different things at once.
You mentioned your sister, and was she also close to your dad when he, at the time of passing?
Yes, but they had a more challenging relationship.
Okay.
Yeah.
And has she ever said to you that she hears from him, or she dreams about him, or she communicates with him? Yeah.
She's definitely had dreams of him. Yeah.
Okay. I see.
Yeah.
Do you have any other siblings?
I have a brother who was my dad's stepson.
Okay. Because then, you know, it gets to be a little complicated. But it's interesting that, have you ever been able to ask him for advice for certain things? Have you ever done that? Like, actually a conversation.
You know what's very funny that you mentioned that? So the last dream I had about him was just several days ago. And these dreams are intense and so real and emotional, and I can
bet
feel
you,
him. And
there's a lot of hotels in your dreams.
Oh right. Exactly right. We're on the elevator. We're meeting in between there. And it took him a long time to be able to show up in my dream and speak.
Ah.
So he's only started talking recently. And most of the time, he's not saying much. You know, it's me sobbing and saying, I miss you. And him saying, you don't have to miss me. Yeah. You know, like the sense that like, I'm not gone, whatever. What are you worried about? But this last dream, he said to me very clearly, you need temporary supplemental insurance.
Is there such a thing as temporary?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
What did he mean by that? For some kind of dental work or some? What kind
of? The weird thing is, we just bought a very old used RV.
Yeah.
And in the dream, I had a sense that he was talking about the RV.
Ah.
And he had an RV, and it's like a whole thing in our family. And we just bought this a few weeks ago, and it broke down immediately and all this stuff. And I was like, what's going to happen to the RV? And the next day I texted my sister and my two cousins, because we talk about this stuff a lot. And I was like, what is going to happen to the RV? And I Googled it, and you can get like 6 month insurance on a vehicle.
I understand. Yeah.
And I was like, are we going to have an accident? Within a couple of days, we had somebody come out and look at the RV who told us that it's almost trashed. It's in such worse condition than we had realized. And I forgot about the dream. My sister was like, maybe that's why you should have got some extra insurance. And I was like, Dad, thanks for the warning, even though I didn't quite understand it.
Do you ever journal about this? I mean, when you wake up, you probably would either record them or write about them and date them. This way you can keep a journey flowing, you know. That's really important for the third book, fourth book, whenever, for the next one.
Right. Yeah.
Talks with Dad.
Practical advice from the other side. Yeah. Insurance advice. Yeah.
The elevators. The elevators. Yes. Wow. So let's talk about the notion of afterlife in relation to us here today, not someone older or someone that's sick or something, about you, because no one tends to get younger. I haven't found that.
Yes,
but we counter it. And I'm saying that because today I went for a bone density test that I hadn't gone to in so years. I was so afraid to go. I thought, oh my God, they're going to tell me that I'm falling apart. And there was nothing about that. And I almost kissed the woman. But there is a way that people, as they grow older, tend, if they want to maintain their sanity, they start to prepare for accepting and embracing a changing persona and a changing lifestyle, a changing anything, because life is change. Have you noticed that you start to do that or have started to do that in relation to yourself?
Yes, absolutely. And it's been difficult for me because I'm so torn.
In what way?
Since my father has passed, I'm very torn between here and there.
Oh.
I feel like I have been living with one foot there.
Yes. That's,
and one foot here.
We have to do that. That's and what it's all about.
It would be easier, except I have a 7-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying I want to die,
No,
but I
so.
Feel much more open to it and accepting of it because I know I'll get to be with him again.
Yeah.
And so to be perfectly honest, what I've been feeling is like an appreciation for how fast time flies.
Yeah.
Because I think, well, the rest of my life, I on the one hand, I can't allow myself to think about the expanse of the rest of my life without mm-hmm. him.
Yeah.
But at this, assuming I still got mm-hmm. a while, but at the same time, I think, well, time flies. So I'm going to die soon. So it's all good.
Well,
except
it's not,
that you said there's my daughter.
But you said something about transitioning. That's you use the word. I like to call it transitioning. You said when my mm-hmm. dad transition mm-hmm. day, his transition mm-hmm. day. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, if we can explore that, and I'm saying this both for my audience and listeners and followers and subscribers, because if you understand that life is change mm-hmm. and you don't live without change, you just don't. Mm-hmm. You can die mm-hmm. tomorrow if you don't mm-hmm. change. And it's part mm-hmm. of adapting and all of that. When you talk about transitioning, that mm-hmm. word transitioning can be broadened in scope to mean that you're transitioning your way of adapting to your capabilities, your skills, your acceptance, your everything you want to, you know, call it. And we could almost liken it, you know, it's easier said than done. Everyone, please listen, I'm saying it, but it's easier said than done. I remember 20 years ago, I had a lump in my breast. I went to have it done and I thought, I want my mama. I was crying out for my mama and it was just a cyst. But when you're there, and you know, mm-hmm. my God, it's a real thing. I'm going to die. You change. You're not the, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. common mm-hmm. balanced person. Mm-hmm. But if mm-hmm. we can adopt some kind of philosophical perspective and mm-hmm. not so much philosophical, but practical mm-hmm. in the sense, well, I have all of these books. Should I leave them for my children to throw out or should I start weeding them out? Being mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. expedient in the way I do things. Why mm-hmm. am I gathering all these things? I'm going to leave. I remember mm-hmm. when my parents died, it was such a difficult thing to go and look at their belongings. And mm-hmm. seeing their clothes and seeing their CDs and seeing their, I mean, it was just being there with these things that reeked of memories was so mm-hmm. difficult. And I thought, mm-hmm. well, maybe I should just slim down the number of books I have and try to keep the Kindle in, you know, put them in my Kindle and get mm-hmm. away from the material grasp mm-hmm. of things in your hand. Mm-hmm. And know that we talked about spirit and we've been talking mm-hmm. about spirit, Carrie, and mm-hmm. a spirit is light. Mm-hmm. When a person transitions, they are with you in spirit and their lightness is something that we should espouse and we should understand. In mm-hmm. your dreams, and you mentioned, you said you were very sad and your dad was saying, "What are you going to be sad? I'm okay."
Exactly.
And when I talk to my guides, they make fun of me all the time. You know, they make fun of me all the time. What are you worried about? You know,
right.
And so, you know, we have to learn about that. But it's so very hard for everyone. And I think mm-hmm. that the more we do that, the easier it is to embrace with a smile on our face, with ease, with pleasure. That we're accept, we are coming back. If we do believe in reincarnation, Why the hell should we be crying over spilt milk? We're coming back and it's going to be much better.
Right.
Our soul has learned something after all, you know?
Yes. Well, and the fact that in between lives, or if we choose to not come back, like they still exist. We will still exist.
Yes.
Right.
And the communication. I mean, the elevators are working. The elevators are working in that hotel.
They're working. And those upper floors, I think, are probably more real and more significant than our floors.
Yes.
We just don't know that yet.
Yeah.
Or we don't remember it yet.
We have too many bills to pay, perhaps.
Yes.
That's what keeps us here all this lifetime.
Right.
But this also ties in as well to our physical, our attachment to our physical persona, the image that we have of ourselves. You know, I was very, very young. I had my first relationship, my first with a boy when I was very, very young. And he was always so jealous. And he said to me, "Why do you put makeup on? Why do you dress that way? To impress other people or to impress yourself?" All these philosophical talks, right? And I'm even the preteens practically. And I said, "Well, no. I do it for myself. I literally can't go out of the door if I don't have earrings on because I feel comfortable with earrings on, you know?" Mm-hmm. I understood where he was going, but the discussion still informs us today. We're here, we're talking, some of us put makeup on, some of us don't, some of us, you know, do our nails, all of that as goddesses. But there is to be, you have to draw a line between becoming obsessed with what you're seeing and where your image is, because people have a very difficult time with their self-image. And I have to say that because people come to me, that is their number one difficulty. They don't call it that. They call it other things. But, and I think that goes in line with our acceptance of transitioning, because it will change. I mean, this face is not going to be like this in a year, two, three, four. My, you know, who knows what's going to drop next, you know? and maybe, who knows? Maybe I should start buying canes. get a whole line of canes, really cool canes. But that is again, that too is easier said than done. A lot of things happen, physical impediments. All of a sudden, you know, you're doing all of the stuff that you're doing, right? Then all of a sudden you have a stroke. And you think, I guess I'm going to take a break. My life stops, you know?
Right.
And that's like the tower card in the tarot deck. That if you don't go in a certain way, the universe or the powers that be will hit you with something, so you'd wake up and you look at what has happened to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And these are signs, I believe, that we're not used to looking at. A lot of people come to me and say, "Look, I'm seeing 1111. What does that mean? I'm seeing 4201 three or four times a day." And I said, "Well, I don't know. I'm not a numerologist, but it must, someone's trying to get your attention, no matter what it means, right?"
Right.
And so think about that. What is it that you're doing that is maybe misaligned or unaligned with source, your divinity, and what you need to be doing? And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that acceptance of the afterlife, of going toward the afterlife, probably starts with trying to get our own alignment toward divinity, because that's where we will be going. You know, we're transitioning toward light. And if you have that intention, if you're the good witch or a wizard and have that in mind, it could be a little easier. I think. I don't know. If you could give our audience one piece of advice before we close that would help in some way, what would that advice be?
Well, again, what has been most significant for me lately, and,
on this topic of spirit and magic and grief is an understanding that we are spirit. You mentioned soul contracts, right? We came here in this lifetime for a reason. We chose our experiences, including the time and manner of our death, right? So when our loved ones die, I believe they chose that for themselves, and we chose to experience it with them.
Yeah.
And if you can open yourself up to that vast horizon of spirit, it provides so much comfort and peace and assurance and safety. That's the first place I would start, is just asking people to start to give themselves permission, right?
Yes,
as I gave myself permission to open up to this, because it makes life and death much easier, I think.
Much easier, right. Carrie Ann Pizzullo, thank you so much for all of these little pearls in Italian. They say all of these little pearls that you've been giving us. Mm-hmm. It was a joy to talk to you. I hope our paths cross again.
Thank you, Claudia. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.